Okay, guys, so I will move a little bit more quickly, I think, today, just because otherwise we're going to, you know, it'll be the weekend, it'll be Yom Kippur, and we will forget what we're in the middle of. So let's, okay. So, well, Sunday night already. So, yeah, if we want to keep this clear in our mind, we gotta move. Okay, so as we know, we, despite the prohibition, let's assume now the Bavli's position of blowing the shofar and taking the lulav, bigvulin, when it's Shabbos. So, the Mishnah tells us that there are distinctions, right, between the Mikdash and not Mikdash, or Gvulin, okay? So, someone want to remind me, you could read the Mishnah here, you could read the parallel in Rosh Hashanah, whatever you want, right? What is the rules that we're talking about here? Yeah? Barishona, read the Mishnah.
In the beginning, when you talk about Mikdash, Shiva, it's taken for 7, I'm assuming it means days.
Yes, well, how many days is Sukkot?
7.
Very good. Yes, all 7 days.
With Medina, Yom Echad, it was only taken for one day in the country, in Eretz Yisrael. But Mishabel HaBeit HaMikdash, anything on Yom HaMitzakai, Shalulah Mitzakai, with Medina, Sheva, Zechar HaMikdash. It would take only 7, it would take it for 7 days, even in the country, as a remembrance to the Beit HaMikdash.
Correct. And now the other one, I gave it to you, we've seen it many times, but I put it in 10, but you've seen it before, right, which is we have the same type of distinction between Mikdash and not Mikdash by Shofar, right? If you look back at the Mishnah that we've seen 100 times, the Yom Tov Shor Shoshana Shechaliyot B'Shabbat, if the first day of Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbat, so B'Mikdash Ayutokin Avalo B'Medina, you blow the Shofar in the Mikdash, but not in the country. Mishachara B'Na Mikdash Yitkin B'Yoch Manzaka Shiyutokin B'Chom Makom Sheish Bo Beitin. And then you get the Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says that once a Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, you blow the shofar on Shabbat wherever there's a Beit Din. And Amar Rilazar, Lo Hitkin, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, El Biyavne Bilvad, Rilazar limits it only to Yavne, to the central court. And Amar Lo Echa Yavne, Echa Kol Makom Sheyesh Bo Beit Din. Okay? So what I want to try to do is define this term of Mikdash and Gvulin, because there's a problem. Mikdash can mean one of two things in general. It can either mean, yeah, exactly, Pshuto Kimashmao, the Beit HaMikdash. But what does it sometimes mean? Yerushalayim. Give me, what is the classic case in which the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is expanded to, of the Mikdash rather, is expanded throughout the borders of Yerushalayim? Very good. Is eating of Maser Sheni, eating of Kachim Kalim. Right? So let's, I won't take any givens. What is Maser Sheni? Remind me.
The second Maser.
Yeah, very good. Thanks. What is the Maser system? The Maser system is divided into how many years?
7.
6 or 7. Both of those would have been acceptable answers. 7th year is Shemitah, so we don't have the normal rows. But 6, right? And really those 6 are subdivided into 3s. So in year 1, In all 6 years, what do you give? The first thing you give is? Before Maser Rishon, you give?
Truma.
Truma, very good. Truma, how much do you give of Truma, and who does it go to?
At the end of the 40th or 60th to the Kohen.
So, the Truma goes to the Kohen. Biblically, how much Truma do you have to give?
Any amount.
In the language of the Mishnah, Chita Achat Poteret Et Hakri, a single grain, a single kernel, exempt the whole thing. Midirabanan, Ezra is correct. The average is 50th. A 50th, 2%. If you're stingy, so how much do you give? 60th. And if you are generous, how much do you give? 2.5%, a 40th. Okay? Then, after that, you give Maser Rishon, which is 10% of the remainder. So let's assume 9.8%, which goes to the Levi. Very good. Now, 10% of the remainder. We'll see how good your math is, right?
What's that called?
Maser Rishon.
Oh, so called that.
It's called Maser Rishon. And then in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, you give Maser Sheni. Maser Sheni, what's the halacha?
You give it
You eat it in Yerushalayim, and if you don't want to bring it to Yerushalayim, you redeem it, bring the money to Yerushalayim, and eat it there. And that you can eat in all of Yerushalayim. Good. And what do you in years 3 and 6? You give Maaser Ani, which goes to? Very good. Now, the other case in which the Kedushat Mikdash is expanded to Yerushalayim is what's called Kachum Kalim. So, Karbanot are in general divided into two main categories. Kachay, Kachim, and Kachim Kalim. Very good. Yeah, that's... So, Kachay, Kachim include the Chatat, right? That's eaten by the Kohen, or the Ola, which is burnt. But then there's Kachay Kalim, like Shlomim, where part of it can be eaten by the non-Kohen, or the Bailim, the owners. Right? And it can be eaten within the confines of Yerushalayim. So, there are several areas of Halacha where Mikdash-oriented halachot are expanded to Yerushalayim. So the question we want to know here is, well, when we say Mikdash versus Medina here, where does Yerushalayim fall in that calculus? So, before you even look at the sources, tell me, a priori, what would you say it depends on? Which would you have guessed? Right? And why? Justify your theoretical position. When we say Mikdash here versus Medina, which does Yerushalayim fall into?
You think Mikdash based on the true one, all those things. It's much a shame.
So Andrew makes a general point, which is, well, we know there are areas in Halacha where Mikdash is expansive, so let's adopt that interpretation here. Okay. Good. Yeah, Yaakov.
Would you call it Mikdash?
Okay, so there could be a practical thing, which is maybe we define Mikdash in a more expansive way when it relates to a broader audience, and shofar or lulav logically should be more expansive. And Mikdash, we maintain, right, you suggest a practical distinction, which is things that are more limited, let's say, right, that should or could theoretically be done in the Mikdash, that logically is limited to Mikdash proper. Right? But things that have no reason practically to be limited, we expand it. Okay. What else? Any other suggestions?
Well, later on we mentioned the opposite, because in terms of blowing the shofar and Shabbat, you're not allowed to, like, we want to make it, you're not allowed to blow in your Shalayim or something like that, so therefore Yerushalayim is that is part.
Now, what? But why, right? Why would you... Okay, we've given several suggestions as to why you might, in this case, read Mikdash expansively to include Yerushalayim. Why might you read it limited?
I have to say because there's a very real space reality that you can't just like the Mikdash is like the village. That's what we're
good. So sometimes you could just say, well, Mikdash sometimes just means Mikdash. There's a linguistic reason to believe that Mikdash means just Mikdash, which is the word Mikdash means Mikdash. Good, okay. Conceptually, why might you want to limit it? Right? What would drive you to limit it?
I mean, because there's nothing intrinsic about Yerushalayim.
Good, is to claim that, well, you have to explain why in each scenario the right category is an expansive Mikdash or not. Now, why, Yonatan, would you say that it should relate to Mikdash proper, right? Conceptually. You're saying you shouldn't expand it, but let's put in the positive. Why would you limit it?
Oh, you limit it from Yerushalayim?
Yeah. I mean, you're saying there's no reason to expand it, but let's flip it and say, okay, why would you limit it?
Okay, because Yerushalayim has nothing to do.
No, give me a positive.
Oh, positive?
I want you to formulate it in the positive. You're right, but I want you to formulate it in the positive.
Because Mikdash has Kedushat that's like spill over.
So one might be that it doesn't, right, that Kedushat Mikdash might be limited, right? But it also might be that what? Right, what types of things are limited to Mikdash proper? Avoda.
Yeah.
Right, things that are Avoda are limited to Mikdash. Right? And if you were to conceptualize shofar blowing as part of the avoda, taking the lulav as part of the avoda, then you'd be looking conceptually at the more limited interpretation. Now, before we even look at these sources, have we in the past seen sources that might indicate that type of interpretation?
Yeah,
The answer to that is yes. As you know, the answer, if I'm asking the question, the answer is probably yes. I could be tricking you, but I'm not in this case. Yeah, okay, but give me, good. I'm not telling you to decisively say one or the other. Give me a source that might indicate that blowing the shofar is mikdash oriented. Give me a source that might point in that direction. Give me a source. Very good, which is quoted by the Yerushalmi. Right? Remember that you blow the shofar where you bring the karban out, right? That was the pasuk given by Midbar Yud Yud, right? Which the Yerushalmi quotes. If you think that the shofar is linked to the bringing of karban out, then the shofar might be quasi-avoda-esque. If you're talking avoda, then conceptually the more limited interpretation makes sense. Okay. So let's...
Does Yerushalayim have no tie at all to
avoda? Ah, so that's the interesting question. You can't do avoda out of it, but you can eat certain karbanot, which, right, so that's why it's in this middle state. If you think it's part of the avoda, so then it's more likely to be a limited interpretation of mikdash. But if you think it's about kedusha, right, kedusha la mikdash, rather than the mikdash qua avoda, so the kedusha ha mikdash spills over.
Is that status of Yerushalayim only from its location that the Beit HaMikdash is within Yerushalayim, or is something special about Yerushalayim itself?
I mean, it's the Makom Asher Yivchar. Right, the Yerushalayim is defined as Makom Asher Yivchar, but it's Yerushalayim is both. Meaning, there are areas in halacha where kedusha Yerushalayim seems to be a spillover from the mikdash, and times in which Yerushalayim seems to be kadosh in and of itself.
Where did that come from? Where would the in of itself kadosh come from?
From its definition as Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem, right? Meaning the fact that the Torah defines the city that God will choose, right? It, right? The city seems to have certain significance, right? This comes up to questions of like, can you force your spouse to move to Yerushalayim? Because right, theoretically,
it could just be there because Yerushalayim is the chosen city for the Beit.
Correct, and right, and that's why Yerushalayim always has this ambiguous,
yeah.
And that's the problem. Yeah, Ezra. So lifnei Hashem Elokeichem usually means what? Yeah. 100%. 100%. Okay. Good. So let's look for a moment at the Sifra. So remind me, what is the Sifra? Midrash Halacha on Vayikra. Very good. Written by what generation? Tanayim, very good. What's good? It's Tanaitic, meaning it's contemporaneous with the Mishnah. Okay, this is very important. This is super, super important. Good, Sifra. The Sifra and Vayikra is also known as? Torat Kohanim, very good. No, Mechilta is on Shemot. Shemot. Okay, good. So who wants to take the Sifra? Who wants to take the Sifra? Okay, go ahead, Yuri.
So, the pasuk, right? Below the inclusion of Koshir, not in the, how we translate it so far, suburbs, outside of.
Outside! Yeah, let's say outside for now.
Well,
it doesn't quote anything. It's before. This is before it. This is before the Gemara. It's the Sifra.
It says the same thing. Right?
Yeah, exactly. This appears. Yeah, exactly.
So that after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai enacted that Lulav should be taken 7 days outside the Beit HaMikdash, where it was born before, as you say, the Beit HaMikdash. On the day of shaking,
right, meaning the Omer, right? That you don't, right? The Takana of Yochanan Zakkai is that in the time of the Omer, you were allowed to eat the grain once you brought the Omer, the Chadash, and once the base of Mekdash is destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said you wait till the end of the day, Yom Hanef. Okay, good. Based on the Sifra, what would you guess? Shofar. What do you think?
Mikdash.
Mikdash, why?
Because he had to extend the 7 days from after the Beit HaMikdash itself was destroyed.
Well, that's the second half, the first half. The first half is biblical. The second half is rabbinic. The first half is biblical. The first half is that in... Good. So Yudi claims that he thinks the simple pshat, the sifra, is that the reason... Right? We have to talk about two things. One is the biblical law. The second is the derabanan. So first, let's talk about the biblical law of lulav. According to the Mishnah and the sifra, the biblical mitzvah of lulav is what? In the mikdash, 7 days... And outside, 1 day. Okay? And then rabbinically, we expand it. Yuri claims that for this, based on the Sifra, he thinks that the Mikdash, the biblical mitzvah of shofar, of lulav rather, is 7 days, and the Mikdash, meaning Mikdash proper. And Yuri claims that his proof is, Lifnei Hashem, that the Mishnah says, before God, which Yuri wants to understand literally as, before God. Meaning, in the Mikdash. It's a halacha of, right, Lifnei Hashem. If you're in the Mikdash, you take it. It's part of the Avodah, essentially.
But you'd be before the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim and still be with it.
So you could read it expansively. You're right. Yeah. But normally, Lifnei Hashem means Lifnei Hashem. Right? It means on the Mizbeach. It means, right? Yeah, Ezra.
Also, you say this from the fact that, like, it's done, like, say, what does, like, take on
Mikdash? Oh, so that's the second half. Right? But Ezra says, well, maybe from the rabbinic half, you can imply something about the biblical half, which is that the Churban here we're clearly talking about is Mikdash proper. So maybe, once you know contextually that it's Mikdash, so maybe the whole thing's about Mikdash. Okay. It's a good linguistic proof. Yeah.
No, but aside, it says he only instituted 7 days in Medina. So would that only be in the land of Israel, or would this be, or how, what would happen?
So Medina presumably means everywhere else, presumably.
Yeah.
Okay. So when it comes to lulav, who stakes out the position? Who stakes out the expansive position? Who stakes out the limited position? Who stakes out the position that mikdash, that the biblical mitzvah of lulav is only for 7 days in the Beit HaMikdash proper, not Yerushalayim, just the Beit HaMikdash.
Rashi
is very clear. Gavi, why don't you read his very clear, and his proof is exactly as Yuri said. So Yuri, in this case, is channeling Rashi. It's a good person to channel. You know what? We'll let Yuri take it. Yuri's channeling Rashi. So read the two Rashis. Good. Take it. Number three. Right, Rashi says very clearly, when we say Medina here, we mean even Yerushalayim, which for these purposes is outside of the relevant area. What's his proof? Yep. Which Yuri just read.
Right?
This remember I just said that. Sifra on Vayikra is called Torah, its nickname is Torah Kohanim. Yeah. Good. Right, so Yuri channels Rashi exactly, which is Rashi seems to think that taking the lulav in the Beis HaMikdash is, the way I would suggest it is that it is a type of an avoda. What's his proof? The Sifra. Because the Sifra says, Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem normally means, mamash, in the Beis HaMikdash, by the Mizbeach, it's an avoda. And when you're talking avoda, so then the conceptual category of Mikdash is Mikdash, mamash. Right, literally, the Mikdash, right, and that seems to be the conceptualization of Rashi, and Rashi consistently, and this goes back to Ezra's point, right? Rashi's first proof is essentially the Sifra, which is Yudi's point, but a second proof is very similar to Ezra's point, which is Ezra. You want to take the second Rashi because this really hits your linguistic point, which is when Rashi comments on why we don't institute the rabbinic prohibition of blowing shofar in outside the Beis HaMikdash. He says why.
The Mikdash,
right? So he says, we don't forbid blowing the shofar in the Mikdash. Why? Because it's only Asr Midrabanan, what we call a Shvut. And there's a rule of Ein Shvut B'Mikdash, that all Dirabanan laws are permitted on Shabbat in the Mikdash. But when we say that, we mean Mikdash Mamash. So there it clearly means Mikdash, right? So Rashi is pretty consistent. He says the reason that the biblical mitzvah only applies in the Beis HaMikdash of taking shofar is because Lifnei Hashem, it's seemingly part of the Avodah. And the Dirabanans, the reason that we wave the Dirabanans in the Mikdash is because the Mikdash proper is where we have this rule that Dirabanan laws don't apply. Yeah. Because Kohanim Zvizimheim. Because Kohanim Zvizimheim. Because since the Avodah is in the hands of the Kohanim, we're not worried.
But we would assume that the Kohanim know enough that they...
Correct. And we don't need to set up protective laws. That's, at least in certain places where the Gemara justifies it. What?
Aren't other people involved in the Avodah?
No.
Well, like, they're doing the Avodah.
No. No one else is involved. Okay. Right? What?
They're
doing Avodah in general. I mean, there may be other reasons as well, but that's one of the main reasons the Gemara...
So basically, breaks. Is there any love shaking done in the Avodah?
What?
Is there any lulav shaking done in the Avodah?
Well, if you think that the shaking of lulav is a quasi-Avodah, so then yes.
Okay.
Right?
If I bring the shofar to somebody who's not a bucket, I bring the shofar to the...
That's correct. So, but in general, we assume that the Mikdash... You're right, there are... For something like that, someone might be there. But once you make a... Right, once you set a rule, you know, you set a rule. There. Okay. What? Don't apply in the Mikdash. The Gzera, yes. Usually. There are mitzvot, there are other types of Derabanan. There are mitzvot Derabanan.
Okay.
Right? Which they are trying to tease out certain ideas and, you know, but Gzera or Gzera. Okay, and I gave you in 5 that the Ritva, again, it's not just Rashi. The Ritva says the same thing. The Rosaruah says the same thing. Just look for a second. The Ritva, Perush Yushalayim, the Kol Sharet Yisrael Nikra Medina Bichol Makom. Now, Ritva is a little bit more striking because the Ritva, right, what is the Ritva's proof? He says the same as Rashi, but he doesn't give a conceptual proof. What's his proof? Right? I want you to be careful, right? The Ritva gives... He doesn't give a conceptual proof. What's his proof?
Matthias.
Not Matthias. I'm not going to call it Matthias. Linguistic. Which is, he just claims that Mikdash means Mikdash. Right? That's it. Right? He doesn't... It may be that he... Lamaskana will think that the shofar is a quasi-avodah or something, but his proof is simply the word Mikdash means Mikdash. That's it. He has a linguistic proof rather than Rashi has conceptual proof. Yeah. Yonatan and Ezra. Yeah. That is a tangent.
Very big tangent.
Yes. So we're not going to do it this second. That will take us far afield. Yeah.
Why is it more difficult to... This is a more general question, but like, I feel like this is a question I should have asked like, a couple of weeks ago. But why is it any more difficult to ensure that people know not to blow / shake the law on Shabbos than it is to make sure that people are not sharing on Shabbos? Like... How does this actually serve to be a Xera? Because the people who would actually follow the Xera, like they just can actually reach, are the type of people.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I don't know. Realistically, I know most people I know, even who are not so educated, know we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos. Even though. Okay. Let me ask you a very simple question, okay? How many people in your normal average shul, okay, know that we don't blow shofar on Shabbos? Almost everybody, probably, right?
Yeah.
How many people in your normal shul, when you go into the kiddush, know that if they get a spill on their shirt, that if they take water to clean it out, they're chayav misa?
Only if they're wearing water.
What? No. If there's a stain and they try to take it out with water, right? They're chayav misa according to all opinions. There is no shita that. How many have you ever been to a kiddush where someone did that?
Yeah,
Yeah, so have I. So, what? What? Yes, exactly. So my point is that I don't know what it is about it, but certain things, people are good at I don't know, maybe it's that mitzvot are more exciting, right? So people like remember when we do and don't do them rather than the intricacies of what's forbidden. I don't know. What? Yes. So they're not, so we won't kill them, but it is a biblical level capital offense to clean your shirt of a stain on Shabbos. What? There's malavid. Doesn't matter. Because you're taking out, right? It's Shri Atozo Kipuso. It's Gemara and Zvachim.
It makes more sense to send out a letter that says you're not allowed to make sure you're not to wash your shirt on Shabbos.
Yeah, do you know how many times you tell, like, I don't know, people just don't get it. I don't know. I think the reality has proven that it's more that this was more effective just because, I don't know, maybe just because people remember what we do in terms of mitzvah more than they do in terms of what's usher. They just don't know everything that's usher. There are a lot of things that are like in Shulchan Aruch or even in the English summary books that you can all read that you don't know. Right? There are plenty of Isurim I could go through that you've never heard. Maybe you all know college. What?
One of the things we don't want to know, one we know we have to follow.
But also, because
yeah, but yeah. What?
Shofar is a communal practice, so therefore, because you see the lack of other people doing it, is the only reason why you know it's.
But that may be part of it.
But the type of situation that would arise, like a communal practice, is when you're not the one blowing shofar.
Look, I know Shomer Shabbos people who view themselves as Shomer Shabbos who don't really know that carrying is an isser.
Okay, that's because we all live in the areas. So that
okay, fine, but my point is that the reality is that somehow people remember more. Look, I can ask the same thing. Why don't people know Hilchos Shabbos, which is more important, but they, you know, like the same people remember the exact tunes that we say to Piyutim. I don't know. We just the way we function, right? There's certain things that are easier to remember and get the word out about. I don't know. It just correct. So it's easier to just say. So it's easier to say we're not going to be blowing shofar.
But when it is a communal thing, there's no problem. If you're a shofar as a communal thing, when you're going to...
That's not true. How many people this year who are in Bidud, right, who are in quarantine, right, were desperately trying to figure out how to hear shofar? It is not true that everyone always hears it in shul. That's not how shofar works, right? People who are sick every year, right? People will go around in the hospital blowing shofar for them at their beds, right? You're young and healthy. You're used to only hearing it in shul. But that's not the reality for, first of all, women in their childbearing years, right? Sick people, right? This year people in quarantine. The reality is that there are many, many, many people in the community. Not like a small minority. There is a large, I'm not going to say it's majority, but there's a not insignificant percentage who in a regular year will hear it in a more private setting, right? That's just the reality, right? Correct, and they might even be right according to certain sheet there on the Gemara. But you know, what can you do? Okay, that's Rashi. Who stakes out the opposite position?
Wait, if that's right, then how would Xerah exist?
What?
If that's right, then how would Xerah exist?
That's one of the questions the Achronim deal with that I didn't torture you with. Okay. Yes. But many of the Achronim are bothered by the fact that according to Rabbi Yossi in the Gemara, Ta'ab Dvar Mitzvah is Patur, right? That if you perform a malacha by accident in the process of performing a mitzvah, you're exempt, right? So all the Achronim say, well, according to Rabbi Yossi, this Gzera makes no sense, because literally there's no situation in the world in which you can be chayev. And their answer is that might be why the Gemara says, not you might carry the shofar to blow it, but you might carry the shofar to someone to teach you how to blow it, because that, exactly, because that, since that's preparatory, even Rabbi Yossi would, right, and they say maybe that's what's going on. There are other answers, but that's probably the cleanest, right? Is that's why the Gemara says that, because this way you're chayev according to everybody. Okay, the Rambam. The Rambam in Perush HaMishnayot, what does he say? Number 6. Yeah, what does the Rambam say? Remember, by the way, what language was the Perush HaMishnayot written in?
Arabic.
Judeo-Arabic. Okay. Judeo-Arabic. It's, if you know Arabic, you won't necessarily be able to read this. It's like, it's medieval Judeo-Arabic. But
Hebrew and Arabic, you'd be able to tell it.
What? It's, yeah, it's really, it's like, Judeo-Arabic, if you want to know Judeo, if you need to translate it from the Arabic, you have to ask someone who knows Judeo-Arabic. That's what I do. I have my go-to person. Yeah, I have my go-to person. I ask, and you know, that's it. You know, the rabbi of the shul where I worked in Toronto, yeah. Ray Karopkin, speaks Judeo-Arabic.
So cool.
I assume he does. Meaning, for his master's thesis, he was the translator for the Kuzari.
Oh wow!
And so which is also Judeo-Arabic. So when I have Judeo-Arabic questions on like Beresh Mishnah, I just call him or email him. Okay. So what does the Rambam say? Beresh Mishnah, what does he say? Yeah? Someone take Beresh Mishnah. Come on, it's one line.
Medina ki pocha erik Beresh Mishnah. Omel vadu Yerushalayim. The Medina is referring to all of the cities in Israel except for Yerushalayim.
Good. What's his proof? You're right. You don't even have to know what he's saying to know that. What's his proof? Meiser Sheni is that there are quasi mikdash kedusha issues where the definition of Yerushal of mikdash, the kedusha, spills over in Yerushalayim. The Rambam and Beresh Mishnayot stakes out the position, unlike Rashi, that
Yerushalayim is included.
Very good. And unlike Rashi, who seems to say it is based on Avodah, what is, right? Why is, right? He's basing it more on either recognizing that in certain circumstances Mikdash is more expansive, or he thinks it's based on Kedusha, not Avodah. And Kedusha Yerushalayim, in certain areas of Halacha, partakes of Kedusha Mikdash. The prime example being Meister Shani. Very good.
Is there anyone who stakes out the
is always expansive? No. There are obviously cases where it's limited to Mikdash.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, Kutche, right? When it comes to the Shechita of Kutchim, it's not just in the Mikdash. Kutchim is only Batsafon. It has to be in the northern half, right? Like, it's clearly not expansive Yerushalayim. We're talking about northern half, southern half, going out of the doors, right? It's very, very much Yerushalayim proper. Yeah, Ezra.
Is the Kedusha of Yerushalayim that potentially exists, like, just the extension of the Beit HaMikdash?
Yes.
So does that mean is it like from the middle?
Very good. Is it from the big? So this is a very important sugya. Is it from the Beis HaMikdash? In which case, nowadays Yerushalayim loses kedusha, or is it from the Shechina? Right. Very good. And that's why, according to the Rambam, it's from the Shechina, and so Yerushalayim maintains its kedusha. No, it is. In whatever sense that means, I don't know what that means, but
it's rather that. It's from the Beit HaMikdash, not necessarily the Beit HaMikdash.
It's not the building, it's the Makom HaShechinah, it's the Makom HaMikdash. Right, because that's where, whatever that means. Okay, good. So that is the two positions that you have. Okay? Now, when we then move into the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah, both for the Doraisa and for the Darabanan, things get a lot murkier than they did in the Perush Mishnayos. Okay? Now, I know some of you read the Rishimos. I don't know if we'll have time to read all of it, but let's at least read these two Rambams, okay? And then if we, right, say the Rub's position outside, great. Okay, I don't need to read it inside, but you have it. Let's read the Rambams, okay? Who wants to take the first Rambam? Now, both of these Rambams are from Hilchos Shofar Sukkah V'Lulav. Okay, who wants to take the first one here, which is Perek Zayin about Lulav? Yaakov.
This was Lulav,
okay, very good. So stop there for a minute. On the biblical question, where is there a mitzvah biblically to take the shofar 7 days? The Rambam Mishneh Torah paskins like who? Like himself in the Perush Mishnah, or like Rashi? No, like Rashi.
Like
Rashi. V'mikdash livado. And this is what several of the Achronim point out, is that why does he say livado? Because he changed his mind. Right? The Perush of Mishnayot, he took the expansive interpretation, and in the Mishnah Torah, he changed his mind, and therefore he added a very important word, livado. Only Mikdash. Now this happens. The Rambam does change his mind between the Perush and Mishnayot. It makes sense. When did the Rambam write the Perush and Mishnayot?
Early. First thing. Right?
What?
I was on the first thing.
No. Second.
When did he finished it in his mid-20s, okay? So like, it is possible that the positions you hold now, you will not hold when you are in 30 years from now. It is possible. Theoretically. Okay? It is theoretically a possibility. Okay? And that's okay. The Rambam does change his mind, right? He wrote the Perush Mishnayot as a teenager, okay? Teenager, young 20s. Yes, all of you should be feeling inferior right now. I know I do, right? It's okay. To be inferior to the Rambam is not it's not so bad. Yeah, Yonatan.
Is he really changing his mind here? 100%. Well, see, I mean, it just sounds like he's specifying for this specific thing.
Yeah, but he said the opposite in the Perush Mishnayot.
Oh, okay.
Right? Okay, that's the biblical. So he just flips. Okay? He changes his mind. You could try to read it otherwise, but it sounds very much like I agree with the Mefarshim who say the livado means he's making it very clear, like Rashi, exactly, and he quotes the Sifra, just like Rashi does. Good. Continue, Yaakov. Well, yeah, when it falls out, yeah. Okay, good. Now go to number 8. Okay, so this is the Rambam by Shofar, but now let's look at the Rambam by Lulav. What is, sorry, other way around. We saw Lulav, now let's see the Rambam by Shofar. What does the Rambam say by Shofar? And remember, this is the rabbinic one, yeah? Very good. Okay, here's the problem. The Rambam in Ilchos Shofar, in Ilchos Lulav, right, in the end of the day, Paskin's not like the Rambam in Perush Mishnayot, and says that when it comes to Lulav, Mikdash means Mikdash Levado. By Shofar, what does the Rambam say? Yaakov? What is it? What does the Mikdash mean? Yeah, it means Yerushalayim. Even it expands it. Not only does he expand Mikdash in Yerushalayim, he expands Yerushalayim to mean wherever you could see Yerushalayim. And that sounds like it's on the biblical level. Right? So according to the Rambam, the mitzvah of blowing shofar applies in the Mikdash read expansively, including Yerushalayim. But the mitzvah of lulav is Mikdash levado, excluding Yerushalayim. So, now what we got to figure out is, wait a second. Okay, either you think that Mikdash here is Avoda, in which case, Shofar and Lulav should both be Mikdash Levado, or you think that it's about Kedusha or something, in which case, it applies to all of Yerushalayim. Why is he saying that shofar is Yerushalayim, but lulav is Mikdash? Good, Yaakov, you'll get first dibs because you read the Rambam. What do you think?
Since you said that by lulav, everyone has to have their own lulav, so I won't be carrying that.
But this is before we get to the rabbinic law. This is on the biblical law. Right, the biblical law, the mitzvah of shofar is in the mikdash, and the mitzvah of lulav is seven days in the mikdash. For lulav, he defines it as mikdash, levado, and shofar he seems to interpret as Yerushalayim. Why? Gavi.
Well, I think there are two different ideas. I think by lulav, the idea of having lulav all 7 days is specifically part of the avoda in the Beit HaMikdash. Whereas by shofar, it sort of has a dual identity of being avoda, but also
being
Yom.
What definition of Yerushalayim are we looking at? So what definition of Yerushalayim are we looking at?
By shofar, we say that the avoda from the Beit HaMikdash spills over into the...
So it could be that it's about Kedusha, but what does the Rambam seem to say? Because the Rambam actually seems to hint at what his reason is. Yeah, Yonatan.
I think it could be that lulav is more like it's like a physical difference. You know, lulav is something that you physically have to shake, and you know that's your action. But shofar is something that kind of spills over naturally from the Yerushalayim because it's a sound.
So you could definitely say that, but guys, I want you to look at words, right? You'll learn that I love theoretical things, but I want you to pay attention to words. Come on. The Rambam tells you, the Rambam is pretty, the Rambam hints at it. What is the difference? Right? You could be right that's what drives it. But what does the Rambam say? The Rambam says, lulav is in the mikdash because, lifnei Hashem Elokeichem, which implies, presumably, it's an avoda. Shofar, yeah, Ezra.
Are we sure that it's a doraisa that you're not supposed to vote outside of the like that you're...
No, it's not a doraisa.
So,
right?
The fact that, like, what the difference between Mikdash and Sukkot with Sukkot is an actual thing also.
Very good. So Ezra is saying, first of all, wait a second, right? Let's hold off. Shofar, the Rambam isn't telling you that the Rambam isn't commenting on the biblical mitzvah, he's commenting on the rabbinic... Right? Permission.
Yeah.
Right? Good. Good. So first is that, you're right, this is a difference that shofar he's talking about the rabbinic prohibition, and he's talking about the biblical law by lulav. But he also tells you why. It's not a rabbinic biblical distinction. That's not what he says. What is the distinction for him?
So you can hear the shofar from outside.
So again, that might be part of it, but again, what does he tell you? He tells you, come on. The Rambam tells you, for some reason, that the definition, right? According to the Rambam, what drives the definition of this mitzvah in lulav? Mikdash. What drives the relevant category in shofar?
Beitin.
Makom. Hasanhedrin,
yeah.
Right? That category is more expansive,
yeah.
Right?
Why is it more expansive?
Ah, good. Why?
Like, isn't the Sanhedrin still on the
well, they're in the Chael, right? They're in the Chael,
yeah.
Right? But, right, what the Rambam seems to think, and at least on the rabbinic level, is that it's not really about Makom HaMikdash, but Makom Beitin. And Beitin is more expensive. And why? What do you think would have given him that idea? Because Yehonathan's right. The Beitin also sits in the Mikdash. So maybe that's a din in Mikdash also. Well, why wouldn't the Rambam want to say that? What's his very good proof that it's a din in the city and not a din in the Mikdash? Very good. The Gzeiras afterwards expand at least to Yavne or to every place of the Beis Din, which tells you it's not Mikdash. It's Beis Din. And if it's Beis Din, of course, the relevant category is in Mikdash per se. What? In a Hanami. But if you think that the Zeichel Mikdash is patterned, right? If you think that you would pattern the Derabbanan after the biblical law, So if you pattern it wherever there's a Sanhedrin, or there's ever a Beit Din, that might tell you something about the biblical law, that the category here is not Makom HaMikdash, but Makom HaBeit Din. And then it's more expansive, yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be, the institution later of the Makom being Beit Din, doesn't necessarily have to be that it was Beit Din all the way back. I mean,
correct. It could be that only the Derabbanan is patterned on Beit Din. It could be. You're right. But therefore, right, there's no denying there's a distinction between the way the Rambam presents the definition of Mikdash for the purpose of Shofar and Lulav. You're right. One is Daraita, one is Derabbanan. And it may be that on a biblical level it's not true. You're right. But as we have it, right, the two presentations, the Rambam take different positions. Because in one case, by Shofar, he says it's a problem of Beit Din, which again makes sense, because remember, the reason we're more making when there's Beit Din is because they'll make sure, as Ezra said, to send out a letter to make sure no one carries something like that. There, the relevant category is, where is there a centralized authority? You'll make sure this is done properly. By Lulav, the question of biblical mitzvah, the relevant category is Avoda. And when the relevant category is Avoda, Mikdash means Mikdash. When the relevant category is authority, so then it's not about Kedusha, it's about Makom Ha, whatever. And then you could start expanding it. So if you look, this is found in several different records of the Rav's writings. I mean, the Rav didn't write so much in his life, but it's found in the Rishimos, it's found in Hare Kedem.
Can you say one more time?
Yeah. Right? So according to the Rambam, when it comes to Lulav on a biblical level, why is there a mitzvah 7 days only in the Mikdash? So the simple read of the Sifra, as Rashi notes, is that it's a din lifnei Hashem, because it's an avoda. If it's an avoda, the relevant category is mikdash. When the category is avoda and mikdash, mikdash means mikdash means mikdash. It doesn't mean Yerushalayim. But when it comes to the dirabbanan of where are we going to waive the prohibition to blow the shofar, so there we say, well, if it's left up to the laity, so we can't trust you to not carry. But if there's a Sanhedrin, there's an authority. Right, so then we can trust that they'll take care of it. They'll make sure it's done properly. There, the relevant category is not Mikdash. Yerushalayim used to be unique because it's where the Sanhedrin were. So in the time of the Mikdash, we blew only in Yerushalayim because that's where the Sanhedrin were, and they were the ones who imposed it. And there was no reason to do it in any other city. After the Beit Hamikdash was destroyed, we said, okay, wherever there's a centralized authority, so they'll issue the same, you know, instructions that made sure you didn't violate Shabbos when you were blowing the shofar. But if that's the case, the relevant category isn't Mikdash per se. The reason that Yerushalayim was unique in the time of the Mikdash is because it was the Makom HaSanhedrin, right? But once that's the case, that's not about Avoda, that's not Mikdash per se. It happens to be that the Sanhedrin sat in the Mikdash. But the relevant category was Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim was the Makom HaSanhedrin. And that's why that can be expanded fundamentally to other cities. So if you look at the Rishimos, and like I said, this is found in the Rishimos, it's found in Hare Kedem, right? The Rav didn't write up many things, but it's found in you know, at least those two places that I know. He'll summarize the sugya. We'll run through it, right? So he writes, Parishona Yululav Nito B'Mikdash Shiva Medina Yom Echad Akan L'Shono. Ayin Peirush Rashi. Shemafari Shadin Yushalayim Hugigvulim. Right, so we saw, Rashi thinks Yushalayim for these purposes is outside the Mikdash, for Lokim Mikdash. The Rambam and Perish Mishnayot argued that, biblically speaking, Yerushalayim was part of the Mikdash for these purposes. And he said this notion that Mikdash and its Kedusha can be expanded the way the Rambam does in Perish Mishnayot, not like the Rambam does in the Mishnah Torah, but in the Perish Mishnayot, you see in certain areas, Kachim Kalim, Maiser Sheni, Nechal Lifnei Mechamat Yerushalayim, right? You can eat certain karbanot in Maiser Sheni in the walls of Yerushalayim, Ki Yerushalayim Yesh Kedusha at Machane Yisrael. Yerushalayim has Kedusha of the Machane Yisrael, V'achila Kachim, Maiser Sheni, B'toch Eir, Chashuv V'achil Lifnei Hashem. And eating karbanot and Maiser Sheni in Yerushalayim is also a type of before God. So now the Rav adds something, which is, how did the Rambam get out of the Sifra that he eventually is convinced by in the Mishnah Torah that it's only the Mikdash? And what's his answer? You could say Lifnei Hashem means Avod in the Mikdash, but you also might think it just means Lifnei Hashem, not avoda, just Lifnei Hashem. And the fact that you can eat karbanot, Lifnei Hashem, and sometimes that it spills over to Kedusha Yerushalayim, is what gave the Rambam his opening in Perash Mishnayot to say it's not a din avoda, it's a din of Kedusha. And when it's a din in Kedusha, so sometimes Yerushalayim is Kedusha's Mikdash for these purposes. Klomar Achila Mikdash, Ayin Birushalmi Vishnatenu. And he said, look at the Yerushalmi, it's basically the same as the Sifra. Usmachtam Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem Shavad Yamim, Itanai Tani Besimchat Lulav HaKotav Medaber, Itanai Besimchat Shlomim HaKotav Medaber. One says this is about the Lulav, one says it's about the Karbanot. L'chadman, the Amar HaPasuk Koyam Mitzvah Achilat Shlomim Yerushalayim Kol Shiva. One says the mitzvah is eating the Karbanot all 7 days of Sukkot. Uluman, the Amar Sheni Hakra Mishtoi B'mitzvah Netilat Lulav Kol Shiva. And the other says about Lulav. Umashma, he said, maybe it's the Yerushalmi that keyed off the Rambam Perash Mishnayah. Because the Achilat Karbanot is something that's totally in Kedusha and can be done in all of Yerushalayim. Umashma Shemitzvah Netilat Lulav Noheget Yerushalayim. And also when it comes to shofar, he thinks that it's expanded to all Yerushalayim, as we saw. Okay. But he notes that the Rambam, while he retracts when it comes to shofar, when it comes to lulav, and in Perash Mishnayot he thought all of Yerushalayim, and in the Mishnah Torah, he thinks it's only the Mikdash. When it comes to shofar, he's consistent throughout. That it always means all of Yerushalayim. Yeah?
If you're going to say Lifnei Hashem is literally just like Lifnei Hashem, how do you limit that to only Yerushalayim and not like Eretz Yisrael?
Because it never means that. Lifnei Hashem never means that. In Torah, it just doesn't. Right? Okay, but then if you turn over the page, the Rav then says, but wait a second, okay? I won't read the whole thing. He says, but there does seem to be a Zachachar. Achar Ayun, Shemayim Lashon Ram, Mistagalak at Akushya. So when you read the Rambam carefully, there seems to be no problem. So look at the third line after you quote the Rambam. Lefia Rambam, Heter Atkia Bishabbat, Bisman Shabbat, Mikdash Kayam, Eino Toli Bikiu Mitzvah Shofar from Yuchet of Yerushalayim. The reason the Rambam, at the end of the day, thinks that shofar was always Yerushalayim and never at Av Amina, that it was only Mikdash, is because the Rambam thinks it isn't about Mikdash, it's about Beit Din. The whole Yerushalayim nechshevet kemoshavam shel Beit Din Agadol. Since Yerushalayim is where they sit, mishum gach mutar l'tkoa b'chol b'cholir b'shabbat. B'ram. The Rashi, but according to Rashi, now he says, according to Rashi, why is even on the Dirabanan level blowing the shofar only Mikdash? Because remember, the Rambam and even Lamaskana, the Rambam and Rashi argue about this on the Dirabanan, right? So let's chazer this one more time. On the Dirabanan, the Rambam says, where are you allowed to blow shofar? All of Yerushalayim. The Rambam's consistent about that. Rashi says, where are you allowed to blow shofar even in the Dirabanan? Mikdash. Why? Because the Rambam thinks, what's the heter? Sanhedrin. Rambam. Okay. Rashi says, it's what's the heter? Dirabanan to blow shofar? Ein shvut b'mikdash. That there aren't rabbinic laws imposed in the Mikdash. So for Rashi, on the Dirabanan, the heter is limited to Mikdash because of the unique heter that comes from Ein Shvut B'Mikdash. According to the Rambam, the Heter comes from Sanhedrin. And if it's about Sanhedrin, so then it can be Kol Ha'ir. Yeah, Adam.
If there were no Durabanans in the base of Mikdash, did they do any Durabanans for Hanukkah? Or they just
did not? No, Ein Shvut B'Mikdash. There's no Isser Durabanan. And no, there are no Karbanan on Hanukkah. I mean, no normal, no like special Karbanan on Hanukkah. Meaning for Rashi, on the Dirabanan, right? First we had the biblical question, now we have the rabbinic question, right? On the biblical question, Rashi says, Rashi and the Rambam in the end both agree that it's Avoda, it's only the Beis HaMikdash. In the Perush Mishnayot, the Rambam thought on the biblical level, Shofar isn't a Din Avoda, it's a Din of Lifnei Hashem, which could be expansive, Okay? Then there's the Derabanan question. Where do we allow you to blow the shofar on Shabbos? Rashi says only the Mikdash proper. Why? Because he thinks what's allowing you to blow the shofar is the special rule of Ein Shvut B'Mikdash, that we don't impose rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbos in the Mikdash, and that is obviously only the Mikdash. Right? But Rambam thinks the reason you're allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos is because we never impose the Isser B'Makom Sanhedrin. And if it's about the Sanhedrin, then it's not a din in Mikdash, it's a din in Yerushalayim.
In terms of
anywhere in Yerushalayim. Anywhere in Yerushalayim. No, it could be anywhere. Yeah. Now, according to Rashi, guys, now according to Rashi, why might you think that that's the Derabanan, but on a Daraisa level, why would you say blow shofar only in the Mikdash? There might be another reason to Rashi, which is what Gavi started with, which is... Well, both, right? But primarily Daraisa, but why the Derabanan might be modeled the way it is, which is... Shofar is also a quasi-avodah, right? Because of Bamidbar Yod Yod. And if it's a quasi-avodah, you could say that the reason... What Rashi's really getting at is... Ein Shvut B'Mikdash is a rule in the Mikdash. Why? To enable avodah. And maybe the reason that Rashi says we only do it in the Mikdash is not just because it's a technicality that Ein Shvut B'Mikdash, but Ein Shvut B'Mikdash tells you that you don't impose derabanans on avodot. And it's an avodah, or at least a quasi-avodah, because of Bamidbar Yod Yod. And therefore, Yerushalayim means Yerushalayim. Now, okay. Let me just make a... Let me make a few points here, okay? I don't think we're going to get to this here, but I want to note that Rashi in... If you look at Rashi in Rosh Hashanah, Rashi in Rosh Hashanah really complicates everything, okay? Because Rashi in Rosh Hashanah, look at his line, look at his phrase, of a lo b'medina, what does he say? Lo v'Yerushalayim v'lo b'gvulin. What's weird about that? Very good, yeah. So Rashi confuses me here, because in Sukkah, Rashi's very clear, which is, why do you not take the lulav or the shofar, why don't you do that outside the Mikdash? Because Yerushalayim is also Gvulin. But in the Mishnah, in Rosh Hashanah, Rashi says, it's not Gvulin, and nevertheless you don't do it. Right? Because he distinguishes Gvulin from Yerushalayim. So this Rashi complicates things for me conceptually, right, in ways that... Right, I think deserve... Okay. Outside, let me say the following, and this will give you a vort for... this is the second half here of the Rav. The Rav says, okay, we've seen that according to Rashi, there's good reason to believe that shofar and lulav are both avodot. And according to the Rambam, at least shofar, at least lulav is. So he gets into a quite technical question, is it only in the Azara? Is it all of Harabayit? Not sure. But he says, okay, but why? Right? Why are Lulav and Shofar, which are not really Avodot, why do they seem to have certain properties, the Avodah? Right? Because so far we've just said, okay, they seem to have certain properties, the Avodah, so that's why it'd be in the Mikdash. But you've got to probe one level farther conceptually, which is, okay, it's very nice to say that Lulav and Shofar are quasi-Avodot, so they're limited to the Mikdash. In what sense are they Avodot? Right? That's the next conceptual question you have to ask. So what? In what sense are they Avodot at all? So that, exactly. So why? So in what sense are these karbanot? In what sense?
Well, the shofar was blown.
Good. So, essentially, the Rav goes in this direction. So if you look at the four lines from the end here, the Rav says what it seems to emerge is v'nir eh. There's one thing which we know is not really the karban, but always accompanies karbanot, and that is? Shira. right? The Levim sing, right? Because there is a notion that part of the Avodah is song and an accompanying contextualization of joy. So the shofar makes a lot of sense, that that's the same thing. And once the Rav has that, he argues that maybe lulav is the same way. That just like Shira on the Karbanot integrates into the Avodah because it adds to Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shofar and lulav the same way. He writes, Belulav, Mekaimim Kiyum Shira V'Hala Be'etzem Nitilat Tokanal. He's Mechadesh, that the lulav itself is a Kiyum in Shira. And what's his proof? So he's or if you had to give a proof, he doesn't say this, but what would the proof be? His proof is simply that what word do we use to describe taking the lulav? Usmachtem. Also usmachtem, right? To rejoice, which makes it sound like it integrates into that experience. I would have said that the proof is that how do we, right, halachically, when do we take the lulav? Hallel, right? So you see that Chazal clearly thought that lulav integrated into Hallel because we take it as part of Hallel. We shake it as part of Hallel. That's from the Mishnah already. So that, I think, is a good proof that lulav in Chazal's conceptualization is a form of Shira and Hallel, and one is a form of Shira and Hallel. So you can say, why would you think that lulav and shofar are a type of an avoda and therefore they'd be in the Mikdash? Because we know that Shira of the Levim integrates into the Karbanot and is a quasi-avoda. Shofar seems to be that way. And once I know that lulav is connected, according to Chazal, to Hallel, so it seems to be that that's what it does also. And that's the petach to say that it's a quasi-avoda. That's the Rav's suggestion with my addition. Like I said, we don't have time to deal with this Rashi problem. The Rashi problem is really weird to me. You know what? But think about this weird Rashi, and you'll see that everyone was really bothered by this Rashi as early as the Ramban. The Ramban in his drushot to Rosh Hashanah already was bothered by this Rashi.
Why is it weird?
So what's weird to me is this weird formulation that he says, right? Don't blow the shofar. Lo b'Yerushalayim v'lo b'Gvulin. That he clearly thinks Yerushalayim is not Gvulin, and nevertheless he thinks don't do it in Yerushalayim.
Oh, why is it pick the point?
Yeah, I mean, if you say that Mikdash. If you say Yerushalayim is Gvulin, like he says in Sukkah, so I get it. Here he says it's not Gvulin, nevertheless, you don't do it. So this is weird to me. Okay, but we'll leave that for another time. We got the main issues out. I know we went a little bit faster today, but that's... You know, I want to make sure we close a conceptual unit before we go into Shabbos and Yom Kippur and whatever. What time is it?
It's past.
Yeah, I know it's past. What time is it?
04.
Okay, so... I'm going to do question answer in 10 minutes, so just...